This is The Way Podcast. If you want to know more about The Way Podcast, go to podcasttheway.com.
How's it going, everyone? Bill here with The Way Podcast. I'm just going to say thank you very much, Don Grant, for that voiceover. For the audience, that's a very generous thing to do, especially with the guy's resume. Definitely check out the Three Interesting Things podcast. Super nice guy. Show looks great. I'll put a description in the link. The Three Interesting Things podcast. Check that out. Let's get into the show. All right, so today's topic, voice acting. And I'm sitting down with a professional voice actor, Don Grant. How are you doing today, Don?
I'm good, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. And you're over in Toronto, you're just telling me, right?
I am indeed in Toronto, yeah. So that's you'll probably notice the Canadian accent sneaking in as much as I try to hide it.
Sounds good. I had a guest from Montreal. He talked about stoicism.
Wow. Okay. Was there a Quebecois accent or no?
Nothing I could notice too much. Maybe a little hint.
It's funny, whenever I do, I have recorded some stuff for American radio and American TV, and frequently it's little tiny words that they'll say, hey, you say that like a Canadian. I mean, the cliche is that Canadians say their OUs a little bit strangely and their R's a little bit harder, but there's other little ones that sneak in here and there that a lot of people don't really realize, and I don't even realize until an American casting director will say, hey, you said that Canadian, Mike.
Sounds good. Do you add in like the A at the end?
I don't. Well, at least I not that I know of. I think if you and I were sitting down in a Starbucks, you'd probably hear it once or twice. But I think that's more of the kind of the cliche than it is the reality. Although I certainly know my fair share of people who say it.
I just remembered, actually, like I was telling you before we started this episode, I went to Toronto. And for the audience, I went to Toronto last summer before this whole COVID epidemic.
Yeah.
And I just found it the funniest thing in the world. But me and my friends are walking by on the street. And well, as you know, in America, it's finally coming around, but weed's illegal in just about most of the country.
Right.
But in Toronto, you guys have it legalized.
That's right. So, yeah.
So first off, a little bit jealous, but eh. But we're walking on the street and we see like this real hippie looking guy talking with the cops. He's got blunt in his hand smoking it. And to us, it's just so bizarre. But the reason we started laughing so hard is because we heard the eh at the end of one of his sentences. So he's being like super polite with these cops, throwing in the eh at the end. It was just the funniest thing in the world.
Well, you guys down there, I think you have, last time I checked, I think it's like one out of three states now you have weed legalized there, no?
Yep. And not only that, one of our states, Oregon, just decriminalize all drugs.
I saw that as well. It's funny because, you know, the last election, there is so much else to talk about that one of the things that kind of got overshadowed was, I think, so many other states ended up legalizing weed. So I think it's like one in three now, last time I checked.
I believe that, right? Over in Connecticut, our neighbors, Massachusetts, have it legal. New Jersey, they were one of the ones to decriminalize and legalize soon. And Rhode Island, I think, did the same thing.
Wow.
In the state, a lot of people are talking to our governor, like, because he said he'd legalize it, like, maybe even 3 years ago, and we're still waiting on that. It's just the income through taxes and everything alone.
That's the thing. I mean, I think it's just a matter of time. I speak as someone who doesn't really smoke really much myself, but at the same time, the income through taxes and, you know, the farming benefits and everything else, it's pretty clearly, you know, a wise thing to do for a culture for the most part.
Oh, definitely. I did a podcast episode like 10 episodes ago where I actually talked to an inmate and he was telling me just like that alone would make all the difference for like, yeah, again, in America, we have a huge crime and what's it called? Jail population.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's a whole different podcast. That's a whole different episode. For the audience, check that out. Episode 12. So yeah, actually professional voice acting. You've brought up accents. How much of an issue is that?
It depends on the gig. I mean, most of the work that I am going to end up doing is going to be Canadian based anyway, but for the times that I have done American auditions and American voiceover work, It's not really an issue as much, I think, in the audition process, although maybe it is and I just don't hear about it. It's more of an issue when you actually get the gig and you're recording the spot and the casting director says, hey, don't say out like that. Say it like out. So that's I think the only, and it's really minor. I think it's mostly a minor thing.
Yeah, both those sounded the same to me, but I'm sure if somebody's really focusing, they'll notice that.
Yeah. Hey, sometimes that can be the case, is that the casting director will say, hey, don't say this, say this. And you'll just be sitting there behind the mic going, those were both the same thing.
Oh, I bet you have to have like pristine hearing too, to go along with the voice acting.
There's a lot of subtlety. There is definitely a lot of subtlety in the craft. And, you know, if you sort of, it helps to know what people are looking for on a regular basis and know what they're looking for even before you walk into the studio. So if you do it enough and you know what the casting director wants, what the client wants, what the lawyer wants, what everybody wants, and you see that again and again and again, that definitely helps.
What kind of voice acting can you do? Do you have like your go-to voice where you just speak over certain commercials or something? Or what kind of variations do you have to perform?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation because when you are somebody who makes a living in the profession, it's sort of like the battle cry of the voice actor is always, oh, I can do more than I get called to do. You know, I can do more than I ever get asked to do. But the way that the business works generally is that you get known for doing a specific brand of voice. So yes, I can do accents. I can do a fine British accent. I can do a fine Scottish accent. But as my agent said to me the very first time I told her that, she said, yeah, but Don, I have Scottish people on my roster. Why would I send a false Scottish guy when I can send a real Scottish guy, which is a good point. But at the end of the day, you end up getting called to do generally the same thing because you get known as your certain kind of brand. So my particular brand that I've gotten known for over the years that people sort of would call me for is that sort of slightly ironic yet still trustworthy announcer. So it's my voice at the end of the spot that's going to say, I'm a little bit ironic, but at the same time, you can trust what I have to say. That's kind of the gig that I'm going to get a lot of the time.
End of commercials advertising a medical like pill or something? Or
yeah, that? Well, sure. I mean, well, the funny thing is we actually do not have that many ads for pharmaceuticals in Canada, not nearly as much as you do in the States. So it's mostly things like, you know, I do a lot of ads for restaurants and for, you know, fast food places and, you know, sort of that. This is the way it's going to be. You can trust me at the end of the spot. Now, that being said, I do a killer, you know, movie trailer guy, but the problem is the movie trailer industry is so closed off. It is so unbelievably closed off that you just have to essentially wait for one of those four people to die and then hopefully maybe get an audition, you know?
Really? Four people running all of the
it is. Yeah, it's crazy. It's really one of those things where the movie trailer industry is so tight. It's a little bit looser now than it was, you know, in the 70s and 80s and 90s and even into the early aughts. It was really basically three people who did it all. But it's expanded a little bit more now. But at the same time, yeah, it's a very closed shop. And of course, it's an American shop, right? So it's not like someone like me has any chance of getting in there.
Do you listen to podcasts at all? I know you're on one right now, but
I do. I listen to podcasts and I have one myself. So,
oh, nice. Well, quickly, what's your podcast called?
So I do a podcast called Three Interesting Things. And the idea behind that particular podcast is that listeners submit the most interesting things they find on the internet that week. And myself and a new guest host every week talk about those three interesting things. So they can be, they can be historical, they can be current events, they can be pop culture, they can be whatever, as long as it's something that, you know, those things that you find in the internet where you go, wow, this is really cool. I want to tell this to somebody. We ask people to send those in and then we talk about them.
Sounds good. And you get to hear it from the voice of a voice actor.
Although who knows, you know, I don't do my full voiceover voice all the time. The nice thing about when you have your own podcast, when you're a voiceover, is that the intro and the closeout, you don't have to worry about hiring somebody to do those because you're doing your own intros.
And then you do you have your clip that you just throw in each time or?
Yeah, for sure. And I have my, you know, because it's three interesting things, I have little interstitials that come in between them saying thing one, thing two, thing three.
Nice. Yeah, definitely. Like I could not mimic that even if I tried. Wait, let me. Thing one. Like,
hey, that's not bad.
Decent. Okay. Everybody says I have a deep voice, so I just rely on that whenever I can.
Well, you know, it's funny when the thing about voice acting is it's a little bit similar. I have a friend of mine who's a model, a professional model, and she says it's kind of the same thing, which is that anybody who's pretty thinks that they can be a model. But of course, the skill set is infinitely more complex than that. And it's kind of the same thing when it comes to having a deep voice, which is that the skill set, a deep voice is definitely part of the skill set that you need. And it's just one of those things that if you win the genetic lottery to have that resonance in your voice, then great. But at the same time, you know, I'm also a trained actor. I have a bachelor's degree in theater performance. And so, you know, there's a bit more to it than just having the deep, dark voice.
I can see that there's a lot of like training behind it that goes into it.
Oh, for sure. A lot of training and honestly, just one of those things where the more you do it, the better you get at it, right? Like anything.
Yeah. Like with me in podcasting, my first episodes, I look back, my friends were telling me, you're going to hate these. I'm like, no, I think I'm good. I'm pretty decent. I go back. I can't play it.
Oh, it's true. Yeah. No. That's it. And listen, it's that way with anything that you do, right? It's like, I do photography as well. And I look at back at some of my early shots and I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? My light was all over. Where did I put it? This is terrible. So it's the same kind of thing for sure.
Same here. I have my own camera. Like I'm not even an amateur. I just do it pure side for fun.
Right.
But even like as side and for fun, they already look like so much better. I'm like, well, now I'm starting to see little tweaks. Like, don't take a picture directly at the sun, even something like as small as that.
Yeah, for sure.
And with the deep voices, when I first got into podcasting, I checked out, well, I actually have a studio, but then COVID shut it down.
Right.
So I had to get my own equipment. And like the radio, like what I'm using right now is the RE20. Mm-hmm. And I got it because it's supposed to be great for deep voices. But right. I see Joe Rogan, I see all those other podcasters, all the YouTubers use the SM7B.
Yeah, the SM7B, baby. It's the one. It's the killer.
So beautifully aesthetic. Like, I wanted it so bad. But I got it, and I just listened to it, and it just didn't complement my voice. It just didn't work.
You know what? And it's funny because that it does different. A lot of people don't realize that different microphones will complement or not complement different voices. And so you can have a beautiful mic like the SM7B. And for some people, it's not going to cut it. There's some people who will be completely fine with a Blue Yeti or completely fine with something else or with a Rodecaster or something. And so I think sometimes a lot of people put a lot of stress into whatever mic they're using, especially podcasters, because the industry is so huge now. But at the end of the day, whatever makes your voice sound good, use that. You know, it's a little bit like there's an old adage in photography where people say the best camera is the one that you have with you. It's a little bit of the same thing.
Oh, definitely. I could see that. Actually, wait, the Blue Yeti, I saw a lot of hate for that. Do you know why?
I think there's a lot of hate for it. Just I don't 100% understand why. I think it largely has to do with the fact that something like an SM7B, we're getting really inside baseball here, but hopefully your listeners give a damn about mics. Something like the SM7B, it doesn't pick up a lot of background noise. It doesn't pick up a lot of the ambient noise that's going to go on behind you. So all you get is that pure voice and vocal sound. Whereas the Blue Yeti, because of the fact that it's a condenser mic, is going to pick up some of that stuff. Like you might even be able to hear my cat wandering around the floor right now, that kind of thing.
It's not dynamic like the SM7B or RE20.
Exactly, yeah.
Like right off the reel bat before I even went to the studio, I bought like a $20 microphone.
Right.
And even that was, if you use software, you don't always like fluff, make everything sound smooth enough. And even that's manageable.
Yeah. It totally is. And it is funny because, you know, the way that my podcast, the way that the Three Interesting Things works is that I have a different guest host every week. And I will admit, I'm a little bit finicky about very tacitly and casually asking, hey, what's the quality of your mic setup over there? Just to make sure that I don't get somebody who's, you know, recording on an old crappy pair of Radio Shack headphones that they got in 1923.
And like software. So like when you're voice acting or I need to ask some of your experience in the future after this question, but what kind of software does the industry use?
That, you know, that's a very good question. It's one that I don't even really know, because the entire time that I am in the studio, I am on the other side of the glass. So when you go in for a professional record, you are staying behind the mic in a glass studio, which is completely outside of the main mixing studio and the recording studio. So you see, you know, all the people on the other side of the glass, and you'll say hello to them and you'll become friendly with them, especially because you record in the same place a lot of the times. But at the end of the day, you do not really see a lot about the man behind the curtain when it comes to that recording. So there might be wiser people than me who have done a whole bunch of inquiring because they wanted to know what the programs are. I have not, because I just never have.
Is the studio like in the TV shows or the movies, where it's literally a guy with a soundboard, you're behind the glass wall, just speaking to a mic?
The studios are all, they're all kinds of different ones, but they definitely can be that. It's not one of those situations where the reality is so drastically different from the things that you see in TV and movies, which is when you go in to record something, you will be, you know, in that studio with the, you know, the headphones on and the microphone hanging and the sound baffling on the walls and all the rest of it. And then on the other side of the glass, you will have a number of people, the client and the casting director and the lawyer and all these people, to, you know, for a typical record. A typical record for, let's say, a 30-second radio spot will probably take about an hour or two to do, to put the entire thing together. And it's usually a fairly, you know, laid back affair for the most part.
Yeah. How long will it take you to perform your part? The whole hour and a half, or just takes you walk in a few minutes?
You're in the studio for the entire hour and a half, because a lot of time, you know, you'll do take by take, sometimes line by line. They won't be happy with this. They have to tweak this line here. The lawyer said, oh, you can't say we're the best in all of Connecticut. You have to say we are the greatest, you know, whatever. Yeah. So there's all kinds of things that happen here. And so then you'll have to go back. And sometimes you'll get a client who is really, really finicky and has to make sure that you say, you know, Diet Dr. Pepper. Well, no, can you say Diet Dr. Pepper? No, can you say Diet Dr. Pepper? Can you be a bit more enthusiastic? Diet Dr. Pepper. Can you bring your voice down? Diet Dr. Pepper. And I mean, it sounds like I'm doing a bit, but I mean, you can literally go on for half an hour with a client who wants to make sure they get it right. And then they have, you know, 50 to pick from, 100 to pick from. And then they say, okay, good. I think we got the one that we wanted.
It's definitely got to be a struggle too. Like, but one guy could be saying, hey, can you be a tweakier in your voice, and you have to be like, what does that mean?
Well, and not only that, but frequently the casting director and the client have differing ideas of what they want from a specific part of the spot. And one of the things I do find frequently when I record is that the voice and the casting director will frequently be on the same page in terms of how something should sound, so that you and the casting director are sort of saying, I think this should be a bit more low key, but then it's the client who's saying, oh no, push it, or whatever, and you're just going, okay, well, they're the ones paying the bills, this is what they want, so I'll say Diet Dr. Pepper, you know, and that's what they'll want.
And you definitely have to like overdo it a bit. You can't just say it. You have to like overemphasize.
Yeah. And you have to give them such a wide variety of things to choose from, so that at the end of the day, the idea is that you want the client to be happy. You want the client to be happy because you want to have a good reputation as someone who is going to do your job correctly. You want to make sure that you are earning your money properly. And you want to make sure that they are going to say, hey, that Don Grant guy, I want him. Let's hire him again.
Definitely. How did you get to that point where they say, hey, I want Don Grant?
Well, it's just a matter of doing enough of the spots, right? So I was on the outside looking into the industry for a long time. The voice industry kind of works in that 90-10 scenario, which is that 90% of the work is done by 10% of the people, which really sucks when you're not one of the 10% of the people. But then once you are that 10% of the people, it's really great.
With podcasting, that's what we're trying to do.
Exactly. So it's just a matter of doing enough of the spots, right? So then, I mean, I actually had a casting director say to me one time that he heard a couple people sort of using my name as an adjective, sort of saying, hey, we need kind of like a Don Grant voice, because
that's gotta be a nice pat on the back.
It is a nice pat on the back. And it's funny because, like, for example, if you, let's say I've recorded a commercial for a car, let's say I've recorded a commercial for Kia, If I cannot record any other car commercials for a certain period of time. Now, it varies from place to place. I'm sure it varies from state to state in the States. Let's say, for example, 6 months. You know, I've recorded a Kia spot. It means I cannot record a competing car for 6 months. So if Toyota all of a sudden comes and they say, hey, we want Don Grant to do our Toyota spot, they will say, that's fine, but Don already has a car. Don's doing a spot for Kia, so you need to find. And then they'll say, "Oh, can we get a Don Grant kind of a voice?" That sort of thing.
Okay, I can see that. On a unrelated note, I remember seeing a commercial Verizon. Like they had some spokesperson show up selling Verizon, et cetera, et cetera. Then the only reason I remember this, and their marketing must have worked because I'm even bringing it up right now, is that then at some point I see a Sprint commercial. Where this guy goes, you might remember me as the "Can you hear me now?" guy or something.
Right, right, right.
And I'm thinking like, no, I don't, because I'm not thinking about that stuff. But it must have been enough time. I think they played a little clip or something, but no, they definitely used that to their advantage.
Oh yeah, oh, 100% they will.
And like commercials, what kind of commercials or what kind of work have you done in the past? What's some of your resume?
I use Diet Dr. Pepper as my thing there. That's one of the bigger spots that I did in the States was a spot years ago for Diet Dr. Pepper, which it turns out was played during the Super Bowl, which I was very happy about. I know.
This one right here, the Super Bowl before.
No, this was way back in 1903, I believe it was. back when the earth was cooling, but I recorded the spot for Diet Dr. Pepper in the States, and which was always going to be a big thing. You know, when you're a Canadian voice actor, you don't get a lot of American voice work because it's different unions, it's different, you know, so there's all kinds of stuff that has to happen for that to occur. So when I recorded the Diet Dr. Pepper spot for the States, it was already good. And then when the Super Bowl was on, you probably don't know this, but they put Canadian commercials over the American commercials here in Canada. So we actually don't see any of the American commercials. But at one point, my phone rang, and it was my best friend who lives in Los Angeles. And he said to me, "Don, your spot just played on the commercial down here." And I was like, "Oh, well, my banker is going to be happy."
Yeah. Did you get like a bonus or anything for that?
Well, the way it works is you get, it's kind of complicated, but the easiest way to put it is the more people who see your spot, the more money you will make. So you get paid a recording fee when you record a spot. And then after that recording fee, you get paid, you know, sort of the equivalent of residuals for where it plays to. So if it just plays to Hartford, I'm going to get, you know, my car full of money. And if it plays to all of Connecticut, I'm going to get my house full of money. And if it plays to all of the United States during the Super Bowl, I'm going to get my entire neighborhood full of money. That's the easiest way to look at it.
Oh, I bet. I just looked up too. In 2018... the cost of a 30-second Super Bowl commercial was $5.2 million.
Yeah.
That's the biggest spot you can get as a commercial, like for a company.
Well, and it's also interesting too now because, of course, in 2020, the advertising industry has changed so much in the last 5 years because of streaming that now there's all these advertisers who have all this money burning a hole in their pocket, but they don't quite know what to do with it anymore because they know that people like you and me can get past a commercial quite easily. And if you're just watching, you know, Netflix, if you're just watching Apple TV, or if you have a PVR sitting at home, it doesn't matter because you're going to be skipping the commercials anyway, right? And so all of these people are saying, well, damn, we've got all this money. We don't want to spend it on TV ads anymore. What do we want to do with it? And that's why you're getting more ads with product placement and that kind of a thing.
I can see that. Do you also have to try to catch the audience quick? Because now there's like a 5-second skip ad or something. You have to be like, hey, like, try to catch my attention.
I mean, that's definitely one of the things that the advertisers do now. That's more something that an advertising writer and executive would know a hell of a lot more about than I do. But just on the end of that equation, I can tell you that generally does happen for sure, which is that in that first 5 seconds, you definitely do try to catch people. One of the main places that has withstood the change in the industry so much lately has been radio, just because if people are listening to the radio, to commercial radio, they're probably in their car or they're probably in a place, like there's no place to skip past radio ads aside from changing the channel, right? So that's why radio ads are still such a strong and regular source of income for voice actors.
I feel like whenever I hear a commercial on one station, I hear a commercial on every other station.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
So I feel like they're all timed at once. So even if I go through, I'm just getting more ads.
Yeah, that's totally true, actually. You're 100% right. It's Murphy's Law of switching from a radio station.
Exactly. And over the audience, 91.7, nonprofit. So yeah, no commercials. And
there you go. You don't have to change a commercial at all.
Exactly. And so yeah, bring it back to the studio you mentioned. How do you prepare, basically?
Well, you will do the audition. Let's say I have an audition for, you know, Diet Dr. Pepper, and I audition and I go home and I think, boy, I really crapped that audition out. What's for dinner? Oh, well, which is exactly what happened for that one, by the way. And then your agent calls you the next day and says, Don, you got the spot. It's recording on Thursday. There's not a lot of recording that you can do because you don't even have the script in advance. You get the script when you go in. Now, more often than not, the script that you have when you go in is exactly the same script that you read in the audition. And so you generally know what it's going to be. And this is, of course, all for commercial acting, right? There's also cartoon acting, which I've done a little bit of. Like, there's all kinds of different forms. But when it comes to commercial acting, there's not a lot of prep you can do aside from just knowing what the client is and remembering what the read was that you did when you did the audition in the first place. And when you did the audition in the first place, there's a good chance that the casting director said to you, okay, Bill, so for this particular spot, they want that ironic guy, but make it a little bit warmer than usual. And so when you walk in for the record on Thursday, you have that in the back of your mind as something that you want to do.
Okay, I could see that. Well, I find it funny because you said you went home thinking you bombed it and then they called you up for the job.
Yeah.
Back earlier when I asked you if you listened to podcasts, the reason I asked that was because I was going to bring up this podcast called 20,000 Hertz.
Right.
Have you heard that one at all?
No.
Oh, I highly recommend it. It's the whole podcast is about sounds and like they just dive into it. And they actually co-sponsored with TED. So.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, they're definitely a good one. They're my favorite. I checked them out.
20,000 Hertz. That's the name of the show.
Yep, 20,000 Hertz.
Okay.
One of their episodes was actually, I listened to it over the summer, was about voice acting and that kind of field of work. And I forgot why. I wish I could remember, but like they literally said that same exact thing you said. Like somebody said, oh, I thought I bombed something, but then they had me call back in when somebody was telling their story.
Well, you know, it's funny because I have a background in acting and performance. I have my bachelor's degree is in theater performance. So I've been on stage and I've been on television. But of course, as most of my professors told me when I was in university, they said to me that I was going to make most of my money off of my voice. You guys can't see my face. That's how you know. But at the end of the day, one of the things that you learn when you do enough auditions, when you audition a lot of the time, is that it is completely useless to predict what goes on the other side of that casting table. You can go in and you can do the best damn job that you can possibly do. But at the end of the day, there is such a complex calculus going into the decisions that are being made, most of which you do not know, some of which might not be fair, and none of it matters at all. You cannot get a job because you reminded the casting director of her ex-husband, and that's just too damn bad for you. Or you cannot get the job just because your voice... here's an interesting story that you might find interesting, which is... I am old enough now that I was doing this job in 2000 and 2001. That's sort of when I started doing this job. And here I was riding on top of the world in 2001. And here I was being the slightly ironic yet still trustworthy announcer. And lo and behold, September 11th rolls around. And here I am sitting at home like everybody else, completely aghast and wondering, this is crazy. Never thinking for a minute that this was actually going to impact me in the voice world. But of course it did, because for the year or so after 9/11, everybody wanted the very gentle, reassuring, avuncular voice who made you feel comfortable. Yeah, that's everybody wanted that. And so everybody who had the kind of that slightly sarcastic read that I had, I didn't work for a year. Like after 9/11, I did not work for a year because of just that weird market correction that happened because of events in the world.
Did you have to like sort of rebrand yourself and really practice a new voice?
I mean, you try, but as I said at the top, it's the same kind of idea, which is that I can do a bunch of voices. You know, ask me to do any voices now and I'll be happy to do them. But it's what you're known for in the business, right? So yes, I can do that warm, comfortable voice to make you feel like everything is fine, but that's not what I was known for, right? And so I was telling people, yeah, call me in. I can do that voice. I know that's the big thing going on right now because everyone wants to feel good and comfortable and safe and warm, but there were other people who were known for that and they were the ones who worked that year.
Wow, I could see that. Even like in every field, every job, you can apply for a job and just be completely surprised whether you get it or not. And I say that because one of my friends, when he would accept applications, he would take half the applications, throw them in the trash because he doesn't want unlucky people.
Well, and you know what? That's the thing. That's what I mean. Is like what I said just sort of at the top of the segment, that you never know the calculus that goes into it. You really don't. You have no idea what goes into it. You just have to sort of accept that. Like if you are an actor, one of the best things that you can do for your life as an actor, for your sanity as an actor, is you can say to yourself, okay, I'm going to go in, I'm going to do my audition, I'm going to do the best that I can do, and I'm going to walk out and I'm going to say, what's for lunch? Because now I have done everything within my power to do. And there's a lot of people who can't do that. There's a lot of people who sort of leave saying, could I have done this? Should I have done this? Did I remind the director of her ex-wife or whatever? Yeah, that's out of your control. You know what I mean? You, it doesn't matter. It, like all of that stuff, it might not be fair, but no one promised you it was going to be fair. And it's out of your control. So all you can do is say, I did my best. Let's go have dinner. And then you're going to get jobs that you didn't think you were going to get, like Diet Dr. Pepper. You're not going to get jobs that you thought you were going to get, like the Oprah Network, but it doesn't matter.
You literally sound exactly like the guest from Montreal I was telling you about when he talked about stoicism.
it's true. I mean, it's like that's kind of what you have to do to maintain your sanity, right?
You said the same thing, like you go in for a job and then the second you're done, it's out of your control. You shoot a bow and arrow, the second you release that arrow is out of your control. It's just stuff like that. Only worry about what you can or what's in your full control.
Maybe, you know what? Maybe Canadians are extra stoic and we just don't get credit for it. Who knows?
You all could be. Could be like a hive mind. Yeah. And how about, what was my question?
Stoicism, Montreal.
Psychologically, they say if you can't remember something, to completely just stop trying to remember it, because what your brain does, it tries to remember that thing you're trying to remember, so it blocks out things like that thing you're trying to remember. But the problem is, it blocks out that same thing you're trying to remember in the process.
Right.
So that's why when you can't remember something, you gotta just move on to something new, and it'll just pop back up to you.
Okay, we're gonna see if we can prove that theory right now.
Yeah, just now I thought that would work. It didn't work. All right, maybe it'll come back to me later. But like you said, you listen to podcasts. Do you know who Duncan Trussell is?
No.
You really don't? He actually, if you get a chance, the reason I found him is on Netflix, the Midnight Gospel. It's a great TV show where they take his podcast and then they like animate over it. But the thing about him is no disrespect to him, but his voice is very, I guess I'm going to say weird. Like it's a very like high-pitched sort of a voice I've just never heard before that I didn't like at first, but the more you listen to it, it kind of grows on you.
Yeah.
So in like, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I feel the same way, but one of my favorite podcasts is The Flophouse. Do you know The Flophouse?
No, I don't.
It's Elliot Kalin, who used to be the head writer with The Daily Show, and Dan McCoy, who still is a writer with The Daily Show, and then one of their friends, Stuart Wellington, and the three of them watch a bad movie and they talk about it. So it's one of those bad movie podcasts, of which there are quite a few, but it's definitely one of the top ones. But Elliot, who is absolutely brilliant and funny and hysterical, I remember the very first time I heard the podcast, he has a very, and he admits himself, he has a very whiny, nasally voice. And the first episode I listened to, I was like, I cannot listen to this guy for much longer. But of course, now that I've been listening to the show for years, it's like, I don't even notice it. And I just want to hear what he has to say.
See that. And yeah, with it sort of becomes their own like niche, their own, makes them stand out.
It can be, it can become a brand for sure. I mean, look, that's what Gilbert Gottfried did, right? I mean, that's his brand, that thing that he does.
Yeah, if you're becoming a professional voice actor and your voice is really unique, yeah, can you use that? Is that looked for in the industry?
It definitely is. It's weird because of the fact that it still is in some ways a sexist industry, in the sense that it's almost, in some ways, it's a little bit of reverse sexism, which is that if you are a guy who happens to have that sort of that deep baritone voice that can make those sounds, then you're going to have a better chance of getting the jobs, for sure. And the women who are in it, if you happen to have that quirky sort of sexy voice, but not too slutty, that's kind of what they go for with when it comes to that. But in the last 10 years, I will say that there's definitely been a lot more room made for people with more unique voices, people with more distinct and not that stereotypical announcery voice. There's definitely room for those people in the profession now, which is great.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of names, you know who Mel Blanc?
Yeah, come on, dude.
Yeah, again, 20,000 Hertz, that's where I found him. But yeah, he's supposed to be like a legend in your industry.
Yeah, total legend. He did I think there's... I can't remember how many voices in the Looney Tunes he did not do, but it's like three. Like he did all of them. He did Bugs, he did Daffy, he did Yosemite Sam, he did Foghorn Leghorn, he did the Roadrunner. He did all of them. He's just, the guy was unbelievable. He was a machine.
He was a legend. I wonder how he even like was able to do that. Like when you're getting into it and you're practicing, are there like different techniques? Like, oh, if you do this, you'll be able to find a new voice.
Yeah, you experiment a little bit. A fun fact about Mel Blanc that I always love is the fact that his, you know, that sort of that Roadrunner sound, that beep, beep, that Roadrunner sound?
Yeah.
He recorded that from a hospital bed. He had broken his leg or his foot. I can't remember which one it was. And he was laid up in the hospital and they just needed that sound because they were starting to animate the very first Roadrunner cartoon. And he did that, and that they used the same one over and over and over again. So every single Roadrunner beep, beep that you hear is the same Roadrunner beep, beep. And it was Mel lying in a hospital bed with a broken lower limb recording that.
Well, I know, Kanye West, like they did something similar when he was in a car crash. He tried rapping from there, like from in like a whole headset and whatnot. Never listened to him, but I should look up that song just to hear how it came out. But for Mel, one of the another interesting fact that I found crazy is, like, again, he voiced these characters so much. Like you said, he had like a bunch of different voices that he would have to voice over, etc. And he actually got in a car crash. And I don't know if it's the same. I don't think it's the same one. Maybe. I think
it might have been two.
But this one put him in a coma. Like, he was comatose for a while. But a side note, when people think people are in a coma, the person's not, most of the time, they're not actually, like, pure out of it, like, sleeping. Most of the time, they're in sort of a half state where, like, an eye will be open, but they're just not responsive in a vegetative state.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to Mel in this case. He was comatose, but his eyes were open, and one of the days a doctor came in, and one of his Mel's characters, I think it was Bugs Bunny, was on the TV, and I forgot if the doctor said something at first or if he just heard the TV, but he actually said like a "What's up, doc?" or something like in his voice.
Yeah, it was actually the doctor. It was the doctor was having a hard time sort of getting through them. So it was a neurologist who sort of was trying different approaches to sort of get him to talk again. And he decided to ask, instead of asking Mel Blanc, he decided to ask his characters. And he said to him, "How are you feeling today, Bugs Bunny?" And then Blanc sort of replied, "Just fine, doc. How are you?" And then he asked if Tweety was in there too. And he said, I taught putty tat. And then that's how he kind of got him out of there.
Exactly. I find that crazy. Yeah, like it just slowly brought him back, these characters.
Yeah.
They literally became a part of him.
Yeah.
If you're in a coma, does somebody need to come up to you and ask, "Hey, Diet Dr. Pepper"?
Yeah, just bury me at that point, if that's what it takes to get me out of the coma. Just pour a Diet Dr. Pepper over my grave.
Exactly. If that works, I don't know. I mean, you would be happy, but like, oh, that's embarrassing. All right, moving on. So somebody wants to get into voice acting. They, how do they get their foot in the door? I hear you have to make like a demo or something similar to that.
Yeah, if you want to get into voice acting, there's, I mean, and I get asked this question a lot because, you know, when you do it, people are like, "Hey, people always tell me I have a nice voice. What should I do?" I must hear that. I hear that like once a week. On
a side track, while I was like looking up info for the show, one of the top Reddit posts was top three questions voice actors hate being asked.
And actually, what are they? I'd love to know what they were.
What were they? There was
that's one of them, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was. It was don't ask them what equipment to use.
Right.
It was don't ask them how to become good, because it's like there's lots of research, lots of Google and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I forgot what the third was. What do you think the third would be?
I would think the third would be, hey, I have people tell me I have a nice voice.
That's what I think it was.
Yeah. How can I get into voice acting?
You could have a good voice, but apparently like somebody with the worst voice could still become better with like practice, et cetera.
Yeah, it's totally true. That's 100% true. I mean, at the end of the day, you do have to know, it's sort of like, you know, I compare it to modeling a lot because it's the same thing, which is that, you know, when it comes to modeling, you know, you do have to have a certain base look in order for people to consider you as a model in the first place. But as we discovered over the last, you know, 50 years, what constitutes a model can vary from year to year, culture to culture, et cetera. And it's a little bit the same with voice acting, which is that, sure, if you have that kind of, if you were lucky to have that voice that I happen to have been born with, a lot of people will consider you as somebody who should do this. But at the same time, you know, as we just talked about, there's loads of room for all kinds of other people. And it also comes down to skill set. If you have the skill set to be able to deliver to the client what they need and what they want and what they're asking for, then great. You know, if you can have the most beautiful deep baritone voice in the world, but if you can't actually deliver what the client is looking for, if you are not fast on your feet, or if you don't understand what they actually want and need, you're not going to be getting that many jobs, because the people who are going to be getting the jobs are the people who understand what the casting director is asking for, who have a sense of what the client is looking for, who have a general sense of the industry and what the voices are in the industry, that kind of thing. So there's a lot that goes into it. So if you want to get into it, it's just a matter of paying attention to the industry. You definitely need a demo. You got to make yourself a demo. One of the best ways you can do it is listen to a bunch of other demos, find other people's demos online, listen to how they're put together, listen to how they're edited. Most of them are no longer than about 90 seconds long. Some people have come up with demos of, you know, 10 minutes long, and it's like, dude, they've tuned out.
What is a demo? Just you acting out a role, like a bunch of roles and combining?
A bunch of roles. It's you putting together some of your best voices. So, you know, if I, like my demo, my very first demo had my movie trailer voice on it. It had my ironic guy on it. It had my straight up announce on it. It had my news voice on it. It had like all of them, you know, just like about a 10 to 15 second clip of each one, bam, bam, bam. And then you get that demo together and you start sending it out to agents and casting directors and various other people, and you know, beat your face against a brick wall for 15 years until finally someone decides to call you in. Quite literally, I mean, that's what it was for me. It took me 15 years to get signed. Really? By it took me forever. It took me forever and ever and ever. I had pretty much given up, to be honest with you, before I got signed on. And then lo and behold, someone decided to take a chance on an unknown, and the rest was history.
15 years of applying and like trying to then being in a Super Bowl commercial.
Yeah. That's the thing, right? I mean, it's going back to the stoicism thing for a second. It's funny. I was just the episode of my Three Interesting Things. It's coming out tomorrow because we are recording this just before Christmas. I don't know when this is going to air, but we're recording just before Christmas. To honor Christmas, my episode tomorrow is Three Interesting Things About Die Hard, which is, of course, the greatest Christmas movie of all time. And one of the things we talk about in that is the fact that Alan Rickman, who played Hans Gruber, that was his very first film role, and he was 41 years old when he got that. Now, he went on to become, you know, one of the most beloved actors in the 90s and aughts before he passed away a couple of years ago. But he was 41 years old before he got his very first movie role. And now that very first movie role happened to turn out to be one of the top three or four villains in cinematic history.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. Plus, another example, you ever see Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
What's his name? Jesse. Apparently, I don't know if that's his first role, but I heard he actually has like pretty much no training. Like,
yeah, if memory serves, it was his first role. He didn't really have any training. I know he was on The Price is Right. You can look up if anyone wants to look this up. Yeah, he was. You can type in Aaron Paul Price is Right, and you can see him in his younger years.
I just looked him up.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Wow. That's insane. So yeah, it goes from, well, I mean, so I guess he has a successful background.
Not in acting, though. Yeah, who knows, right?
Unless he was an actor in that. What if the whole show's fake? You never know.
That's at the end of the day, what it comes down to is you honestly can never know. Like the people who are going to make it are going to make it for a variety of reasons. And anyone who tells you will make it if you work hard, it's not true. Working hard is definitely a factor for sure. And you got to work your ass off to do it. But at the end of the day, there are other things that can do it. Or people who will tell you, you know, if you're lazy and don't do anything, you'll never make it. That's not true. There's some people who just happen to luck in or know the right people. So you can't sort of think that there are absolutes in any of these businesses, especially when it comes to acting and voice acting. You just got to do your damn best to come up with whatever you can do. And hopefully someone will give you the chance to sit in front of a mic and make money out of it.
You got to actually have like substance behind it. You actually have to like maybe know the topic. You can't just. It's having a combo. And then I see the opposite where people, they have good shows. I'll like check it out. I'll tune in. But there's nothing behind it except like not even social media or anything. It's like, well, you got to get your foot in the door. You have to make people want to even like look at you, you know?
Right. I'm sort of in the midst of that with my show right now, right? I just launched about 2 months ago. And so it's a matter of, you know, I feel pretty comfortable with the content right now. I feel pretty comfortable with the sound quality. I feel like I'm putting out a pretty good show that I feel people will generally like. But at the same time, yeah, you're right. You got to do the grind. You got to get on Twitter. You got to get on Instagram. You got to shout it out on your social media feeds. You got to have other people on the show. You got to be coming on shows like your show and saying, hey, guys, listen to Three Interesting Things. I guess the only difference is that I'm not really one of those kind of listen guys. It's sort of like my attitude has always been when it comes to my own podcast is like, my attitude has always been one of, hey, listen to the show. If you like it, great. Subscribe and keep listening. And if you don't like it, guess what? There are a million other podcasts out there that will probably suit your needs. And I hope you have a good time finding one because mine might not be for you, but I hope it'll be for people.
That's the approach you need. And yeah. I was going to say, too, you have experience 15 years waiting, but there's also the factor of time. Sometimes you just got to give it time.
You do. You totally have to give it time and, you know, hopefully, you know, and, you know, and not be a slave to the numbers, right? I mean, like, yeah, I look and see how many people are listening to my show. And yeah, it's going up and that's great and that's fine. But at the same time, I'm not going to lose any sleep about the fact that one episode maybe does a little bit worse or a little bit better or whatever, right? It's just, hey, I feel good about the episode. Done. What's for dinner?
Stoicism.
Stoicism, baby. Canadian stoicism all the way.
Exactly. And all right, so bring it back though, like what kind of like how much practice did you put in? I mean, like 15 years building up to your first audition or your first work. So what kind of like practice did you have to do? How much would you practice? What kind of techniques would you use?
So the techniques, mostly the funny thing is a lot of people forget the fact that when it comes to voice acting, they forget the acting part of voice acting. They think it's all about having the voice, right? They forget the fact that you do actually have to do acting, even when it's commercial work. I know it sounds stupid because you're trying to get somebody to go into the Olive Garden for the special this week. But at the same time, you have to be bringing a realism and you have to be bringing a personality to it. And you have to be bringing whatever the people are asking you to do. So the preparation comes from, you know, like in the meantime, when I wasn't doing voice work, I was still doing, you know, plays. I was still doing theater. I was still doing occasional little TV roles here and there. And all that stuff is cumulative. You know, you all those skills that you learn, they transfer from one to the next, which is listening, understanding, being a character, translating it all into knowing what the person wants. That's at the end of the day, those are the skills that are going to take you farther than anything else, is just listening, understanding, being amenable to what you're being asked to do, and taking all those skills and sort of synthesizing them all together.
That's one of the weird things too. You have to do like what's good for what the audience wants. But like if you play basketball and you have an opponent, you just have to be better and score the point. If you score the point, you win.
Yeah.
But for like your voice acting, you can do all these different voices, nail it, but like you don't win just because you nail it.
No, exactly. I can be the Kawhi of voice acting. It doesn't really matter because, you know, like I can have the greatest voice in the world, but all of a sudden 9/11 happens and my voice is not in anymore, right? And voice acting goes through trends like anything else, right? There are definite trends of now this year is going to be, you know, like this year in particular, because of the pandemic, we've gone back a lot more to that kind of comforting voice again. So you do find a lot of people working with that voice to make sure it's been a different kind of year, but this year we've had your back at blankety blankety bank. You know, that's been the kind of read that's been happening this year. So you're right. It doesn't matter necessarily if you are the Kawhi of voice acting, because all of a sudden your read will not be the read that is in vogue at the time.
Also, Kawhi, when I was in Toronto, I saw a playoff game, Kawhi when he was with the Raptors.
Yeah,
playing
baby.
The Bucks. Yeah, that was a great game, and I was happy they won. But then in the championship, they beat my team, so.
Oh, sorry about that, man. And you know what? It's hard not to like Golden State. They're a great team. And, you know, Steph, how can you not like Steph?
He's got a great backstory. He's like a friendly guy. He's villains. Well, him and LeBron, they each do their own like amazing charity work and whatnot.
And hey, fun fact, Steph's dad used to play for the Raptors.
Really? There you go.
Yeah. Del Curry used to be a Raptor.
They might have to become my second favorite again.
Hey, you know what? The Raptors are also a very easy team to cheer for, because I'm a big basketball guy, and the Raptors are a bunch of very, very fine individuals, which you don't necessarily always get. It's not guaranteed when it comes to professional athletes. But the guy who runs the team, Masai Ujiri, and the coach, Nick Nurse, and everybody else, they all are pretty, it's a group of mensches. They're a bunch of stand-up guys, and so it makes them very easy to cheer for.
I believe it. Plus, there's the whole Canadians are known as being nice. So yeah. You see a fan base that's nice. It's like, well, you kind of want to join that fan base.
Of course, there's only one Canadian on the roster, but you know, it doesn't really matter. We've adopted your Americans. And so, you know, our well, the favorite Canadian now is Kyle Lowry, who's from North Philly. So who cares? I wish he was from Canada. Although this is kind of his adopted home. His kids go to school here, and he loves Toronto. So
definitely, I could see that. So, well, actually, when I was trying to remember what I was trying to remember earlier, like I kept trying to think of my next question because I had a perfect question to follow up.
Yes. Did you remember it?
I did.
Hey, it worked.
Exactly. You just got to focus on something else. It comes back to you.
Say basketball, Kyle Lowry. It brought it back.
Exactly. I don't know how, but my question was, when you're in the studio, everybody gets nerves. Like you get nervous about playing basketball, you get nervous about podcasting, you get nervous about going for your job and applying. Stoicism. But So my question was, when you're nervous, like somebody's getting into your field, and even you probably yourself when you start out, when people are nervous, it's hard to like maintain a same level of voice. It's hard to, maybe you'll stutter in your speech like something like that.
Yeah.
You'll get nervous. So how do you sort of maintain your composure when you're in the studio?
The nice thing about it is that when you are in the studio, you are allowed to screw up, right? So yeah, like I will say, like in all the forms of acting that I have done over the years, I will say that voice acting is probably the most stress-free. I'm not going to say it's stress-free. It's silly to say that, because there are definitely stresses that come with it, and there's definitely stuff that happens. But at the end of the day, the one thing that you have in your corner is the fact that you can screw up this take. You know, if I don't say Dr. Pepper, you know, it's better than the original. If I don't say it right this time, I'll say it right the next time. If I don't say it right the next time, I'll say it right the next time. No one's going to hear it until it's been through 37 people who have edited it, tweaked it, processed it, cut it, cleaned it, and put it out for public listening. So I can screw up as much as I want. If I'm in a play, if I'm in a production of, you know, Little Shop of Horrors, and I'm out there and I screw up something, that's it. You know, that's it. That's why I will get much more nervous when it comes to something like live theater than I will with voice acting, because with voice acting, I can screw up as much as I want. So if my voice is wavering or quavering, or if I all of a sudden do one of these, it doesn't matter. You know, everyone's just going to laugh in the studio and I'll do it again, you know?
Sounds good. And yeah, you say like the editing, I feel like the Adobe Audition or whatever softwares they use, I feel like that's the Photoshop of the modeling world.
It totally is. It 100%. It's the Photoshop of the voice world. And the thing is, a lot of people don't realize how much editing goes in. Even this show, like the people who are listening to this show right now will probably not realize how much editing Bill has done to make this show actually work. Now,
it's true.
if people don't realize how much editing has gone into this show, all you have to know is that Bill and I have now been talking for an hour and 5 minutes. So if you think about that, look down at the counter for this podcast and see how many minutes are through this show, and you can see how much Bill edited out. So you can see how much work goes into making something like this work.
Yep. Sounds good. Yeah. About an hour in, I think that's about a good point to wrap it up, I'd say.
Yeah. Anything else you want to know?
I guess, what's the final message you'd give for the audience?
Well, it depends. What in terms of voice acting, in terms of make it more specific, and I'll give the best that I can.
Like, if there's one most important thing you'd tell the audience about professional voice acting, what would it be?
It would be that professional voice acting is just like any craft that anyone does, which is that if you have an affinity for it, do it, practice it, get better at it, and someone might give you the chance to make money at it. And you know, that's the way it works with anything. That's the way it works with woodworking, with electrical engineering, with journalism, with voice acting, with modeling, with photography, with podcasting, with computer programming. If it's something that you like and it's something that you have an affinity for, work your butt off, get better at it, figure out how to do it, figure out the ins and outs of the industry. And when you've done all that, there is a greater chance that you will be successful at it. It's not guaranteed because nothing is guaranteed, but there's definitely, you're giving yourself a better chance to be successful at something that you love.
Sounds good. Well, thanks, Don Grant, for coming out to the show.
Hey, my pleasure. If anyone wants to hear more, just tune into Three Interesting Things and see if you like it. And as I said, hey, if you don't like it, find another show. There's a lot of podcasts out there.
Sounds good. I'll put a link for that in the description.
That's awesome. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it.
Now, this is The Way Podcast on FM 91.7, WHUS Stores at the top of the hour. For more, go to podcasttheway.com. And actually, Don, can you do a little ad saying, listen to The Way Podcast and go to podcasttheway.com?
Yeah, I was just thinking as you were doing that, I was like, hey, man, I should be doing that. Okay, so what am I saying?
Basically, just however you want to say it, tell people to listen to The Way Podcast and go to podcasttheway.com.
This has been the waypodcast.com. No, sorry, hold on. See, there it is.
Yeah.
This has been the Way Podcast. If you want to know more about the Way Podcast, go to, what's the website again?
Oh, yeah, podcasttheway.com.
Go to podcasttheway.com. See, now what you're going to do is you're going to edit all my tweaks out of there, and then it'll just sound really beautiful, and then no one will know that I screwed it up in the middle.
I can combine, yeah, just crop out that middle.
Yeah.
I can literally see I've done it so much, I can literally see the frequencies.
And you can see the waveform, exactly.
You see the little tricks you need to make it sound even smoother.
This is The Way Podcast.
And as always, deuces.
This has been The Way Podcast. If you want to know more about The Way Podcast, go to podcasttheway.com.